to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or favorite recipe, please contact us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are all archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about blaming others. You know, sometimes it's kind of, well, we don't want to take responsibility, so we blame someone else for something that has happened or something that hasn't happened and we want it to happen. And we all do that. We're human beings. But as leaders, we have to remember that we need to set a good example and that we need to truly lead. So, as our startup question, as we often do, let's start from the beginning and then work our way towards a solution. Within our context, the context of a workshop, a seminar, a alternative dispute resolution, mediation, and arbitration, whatever it is we're doing, that we are being the leader, that we are trying, A, to get to a successful outcome, and B, maybe not to go to court over something. Within our context, what actions do we often blame on others? What do we kind of like to push off and blame on somebody else? Because that's really what we need to think about. Are we blaming someone else when really, although they might have contributed, this is true, when really it's us, it's our frustration, our inability to see that we need to change something, our set ways perhaps. Yeah, we all get kind of set in our ways. We all do things a lot a certain way, and then we think, well, that's the way it should be done. But, well, maybe we need to think about that. So, now we've got lots of participation. Yay! And lots of good ideas. Thank you so much for being here. I'm going to say that our first topic, then, from looking at these answers and the comments, is that the most popular thing we blame on others, I'm going to call it kind of, well, you know, I don't like to say poor leadership skills, but maybe leadership skills that we need to hone, that we need to do better. And because we haven't, we blame the results on others. Perhaps the participants, poor leadership, kind of. Yeah, because we would never, of course, have poor leadership skills. But we might have some leadership skills that we need to think about, and we need to perhaps, people are saying everybody has room for improvement. And that's true. Everybody has room for improvement, including me. Yeah, and I've been doing it a really long time. Right, yeah, I admit this. Geeta and others are saying that what we blame on others is their refusal to listen, basically speaking. Yeah, that they're not listening, and that's why we're not getting anywhere. Now, maybe that's true, that they're not listening. But as leader, we need to involve them in the listening process, right? And that's really what the civility rules do, isn't it? Yes, we've got quite a few new people and lots of people have been here before. Thank you all for being here. Recipe for Peace Now has very few rules. We usually say whatever works within the context of leadership and negotiation and skills, right? But the one thing that we do have is the civility rules. And basically speaking, that says that we will not be rude to each other. Now, depending on the situation, depending on the group, depending on the participants, depending on the group dynamic, that gets expanded, right, to specifically accommodate whatever's happening. But basically speaking, it means not being rude to each other, and that involves listening, right, and taking turns. Mm-hmm. So we need to, if we've got refusal to listen, blame the situation, then that we will listen to each other, right? Yeah. And you can't blame the failure or the lack of progress, because we haven't failed, of course, but lack of progress on the fact that they won't listen. Hmm. This is the part where we reach consensus and we get together and we talk to each other and we explain the listening process, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good point. We live in the real world, right? And this is a practical show. And sometimes it doesn't have that much to do with our leadership ability. It has to do with the fact that there is longstanding animosity between the parties. Mm-hmm. They weren't listening to each other long before we got here. They are here for specific, they are before us, they are with us as a group because of a specific issue that has come up. And we are the impartial third party usually brought in, right? Mm-hmm. To fix the impasse, to get them past it. So that is our job, to get them to listen to each other, to break the impasse, to go forward. I usually explain the consequences of not listening and not going forward, right? Yeah. So that we all understand, each participant understands their, yeah, people calling it their stake in the game. Yeah, it really is true. Their advantage to going forward is what it really is what you're explaining. Why you should. Even though, when you get back to the real world and you're not in this particular issue and we've resolved it, and the faster we do it, the faster you get rid of each other, you can still hate each other. That's fine. As I say in the little opening remarks, you don't have to be friends. You just have to be willing participants for this specific issue at this specific time. Right? Yeah. Then you can go back to the way you were. I'm not a psychiatrist. I can't fix you. Only for this group, for these issues, for now. Because we've got to pull together just this once, or we're both going to have a bad outcome. Right? Yeah. So refusal to listen, it is, you can't blame it on someone else because you're supposed to get them to listen to each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, quite a few people, Eric and others, are saying that you need to sometimes call in other people of influence to the participants to tell them that they have to kind of go over their head, so to speak. That's oftentimes a really good idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I call that seeking expert advice because they're an expert on these people, right? That's seeking expert advice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what else do we sometimes, what other actions do we often blame on others when really they have to do with our leadership skills? Mm-hmm. This is an interesting point that quite a few people, Charles and others, are making. That they didn't ask questions when offered and they didn't get an answer because they didn't ask the question. Yeah, anthropologists have this a lot. It's kind of like, well, you didn't ask me, so I didn't tell because you didn't ask. Even though I knew that you would want to know and you just didn't know to ask the question. Yeah, that's true. People have seen me in action, and thank you for mentioning that. And I actually leave time for questions at the very end, or even while we're going through the process. Not the very end of the process, but as we go along, at the very end of each step, as the I guess I do it constantly. This is true. People are saying I do it constantly. I ask if there are any questions and if there's anything else we need to do, know, or say to each other. Yeah. You want to, people are going to, let me write that down. Fabulous. Yes. Because I don't want somebody to say, I didn't tell because you didn't ask. What do you mean you didn't ask? You knew that the group, it was information that we needed that we could use. You shouldn't have to wait to be specifically asked, but I do. I say, is there anything else we need to do, know, or say to each other? Now's your moment, yeah? There's something else that you know. I've asked the question. Anything else we need to do, know, or say to each other? Because that means that I've asked the question. Because I didn't know what the specific question was, because I didn't know I needed to know it, because I didn't know that we were, that, you know, sometimes there's something that you, that the group would like to know that impacts the results, and you don't know that you need to know it, that someone knows. So ask the general question. Yeah. Anything else we need to do, know, or say to each other? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because a lot of times, yeah, nobody asked me. Well, nobody knew to, and you knew it. Mm-mm-mm-mm. You have only yourself to blame if you didn't ask the general question. Excuse me, took a sip of water. Who knows something that we'd like to know that nobody's thought to ask about, but makes a difference? Come right up. Come and tell us. Yes. Actions do we often blame on others besides these? You know what's coming up quite a bit? Sarah and others are saying that we blame our own fear on others. Yeah. Sometimes we are inside kind of scared or frustrated, right? Frustrated. And we blame that on others. And, well, we as good examples of leaders don't do this. But people get frightened or anxious or frustrated or name some, and they lash out, right? It's just because they're feeling just nasty, and they just lash out suddenly because some sort of an outside emotion has crept in, right? Yeah. Ooh, hatred. Well, sometimes that does kind of surface, well, strong emotions sometimes surface, like fear, mostly the negative ones, I must admit, because the positive ones are a good thing, right? We don't blame those on others. We think, wow, that's fabulous. But the negative emotions, fear, anger, frustration, hatred, yeah. We blame those on others, but we need to enforce the civility rules. And we have to make sure that we haven't kind of bought into because of our own emotions, our own fear, right? Yeah. Yeah, sometimes, it's an interesting point, sometimes you fear the repercussions, I'm going to call it. Because I'm getting a lot of examples where people have had kind of a justifiable, it's their fault because they did something that caused the group to be scared, participants to be scared to go forward. That does, I don't know if that's blaming others, but when someone really does something like proactive to cause the participants to be afraid to go forward, that has to be dealt with. You have to deal with the person who is doing it or the group. Yeah, I'm thinking a lot of you have had this with enforcement of government enforcement, because this is a global show, and some of you live in governments that are more, they're less human rights, is not as important to them, for example. But even in countries where the government's not so much against you because of free speech, which I'm fortunate to live in the United States, you see that a lot with participants who are dealing with a complex issue, like a social reform issue, and they are part of a group that doesn't agree with their personal idea. Yeah, and expulsion from the group is a real threat. Or being shunned. Or losing your job. Yeah, that's a real threat, an economic threat, right? Yeah. You see that with, like, union organizations and stuff. You're losing your job. Yeah. With whistleblowers and stuff, there's laws about it, but still, that's a real issue, and that is... Sometimes the blame on others is legitimate, right? It's not necessarily because we're talking about it as though we are doing it irrationally and it's a bad thing. I suppose it's a bad thing. But sometimes the others have really done something that warrants blame, something proactive that is causing your participants to have fear and to back away. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And... you need to understand it and see what can be done. Right? Yeah. Understand it. But because it's not, you can't just ignore it, because it's that serious when you've got someone, some organization, some person who is exerting serious pressure. That is rightful blame on another. And they need to be dealt with. They need to back off. They need to understand that this is important and we need to go forward with it. Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes you do lose a participant because they just cave. The pressure is too much. Mm-hmm. I've seen that mostly with reform, I'm going to call it. Yeah. People call it workplace, too. A lot of you have had workplace examples on that. And it's a good point. There's some sort of a group that's disfavored in the workplace. And if word gets out that you're talking to them, there will be career repercussions. Yeah. Some groups need more control over the electronic devices and more anonymity than others, right? Yeah, very important, very good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are doing it, a lot of people have seen it with religious groups, for example. You, as an individual, wishes to join a religious group, but it's against their family's wishes, for example. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fear and pressure and like that, that's something, if it's being done deliberately, that's something you can't blame on others. That's legit. That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we're getting a lot of ideas, and thank you very much for all of your participation. It's wonderful. We're getting a lot of ideas about the context of blaming others and the lack of understanding due to different, let's see, Thomas says, the lack of understanding due to different, for example, Hussein says culture and religion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is not, you can't blame someone for their culture and religion. You have to think about it. You have to ask questions. I'm very interested in other people, and you should be too as leader, because everybody does want to know. They're not just sitting there blaming others and thinking about their own biases and like that. They kind of would like to know something. I would like to know something. about your culture, about your religion, about your about the rules under which you have your life. Yeah, I'd like to know. I'd like you to tell me. I'd like you to tell me your opinion. And I'd like to tell. I'd like to break out what we always call on this show the five W's: who, what, where, when, and why. But not as an inquisition, not with a accusatory manner, but with true interest. Yeah, I'd like to know. And how does that fit into what we're trying to do? Yeah, how can we accommodate that? How can we understand that that's where you're coming from, your culture and religion, and that it blends with us so we can work together? Yeah, how can we do that? How can we get that going? How can we figure it out? That's the key to it. Yes, wonderful. Mm-hmm, yeah. So lack of understanding to different cultures and religions, that's not a blame game. That is a learning experience, right? Yeah. And sometimes, often, well, kind of frequently, when I come in with like a multinational organization or company, sometimes it is my culture and religion that is different, right? And I have to think about that. And I have to think about how my view of the world, my worldview, blends well with this, with these ideas, with this group, with this plan, with this process. Yeah. So we have to think about when we're trying to sift off some blame on someone else, let's think about whether it's deserved or it has to do with our reactions, right? Yeah. Interesting point that Barbara and others are making, that sometimes the difference that is creating some blame unreasonably is due to economic background. We have different, I don't like to say different amounts of money, but we have different levels of career, perhaps. Mm-hmm. We are on different tracks within our organization, within our workplace. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we might even have come from different economic circumstances, because it does kind of make a difference on your view of the world until you consciously make an effort to change it. Because it's how you were raised. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it comes out in strange little ways. People are giving examples. Sometimes people who are now very successful, right, they're kind of unreasonably is a bad word because it goes to my bias. They are kind of cheap, especially on other people, because they came from kind of tough economic background and they've got that mindset. I'm not going to name names, but I have just been in a group. In the United States, we have minimum wage laws, right? And it means that people make a base salary, and then oftentimes they get tips and stuff if they're under minimum wage. But they make a base salary, and then it goes up from there. The states, well, actually the counties, some cities and stuff, but it's not uniform. There's a base minimum wage, frankly quite low, that's mandated by the federal government, which is the high government here. And then your area can set a higher minimum wage. I live in a place that's got the highest minimum wage in pretty much in the country. It's $15 an hour. Now, is that a lot of money? Well, it's kind of expensive to live here, too. So it's not a tremendous amount, but employers are really, really balking and trying to find a way around it. And some of it, some of the discussion, some of the balking, is because the employers, the people who have the ability to set policy for the organization, And we're talking big organizations here, big multinationals. They've got a mindset about other people's livelihood, right? And they're kind of, they don't value the workers who are making the minimum wage, right? Yeah. And I must confess that I have a mindset the other way, and I know it. And I am aware of the fact that to me, that doesn't seem unreasonable, the $15 an hour. But to the employer, they're multinationals. It's not like they're going to go bankrupt. They're not a small bakery or something where $2 an hour is going to be a real big deal. That's, you have to think about that and to see whether or not, and they blame the government, which is blaming the other. But sometimes in the context like that, blaming an outside, nameless, faceless other is okay because it gets us past the blame game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we're going to do it. It's just that we're going to crab about it. It's what it really is. We want to vent. And sometimes blaming others, you have to think about that as leader. Is the blaming others pulling us apart because the other is someone in this room or someone we need to deal with? Or is the blaming of others giving us uniformity, kind of bringing us together, giving us someone outside of the group, someone nameless, faceless, and we can't do anything to hurt, gives our group a focal point, right? Yeah. So sometimes blaming others is surprisingly not a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's like blaming politicians or the government. Ooh, God. Well, depends on the group, right? Yeah, sometimes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially, it depends what the issues are, really. But sometimes you can become closer by blaming an outside influence for the problem and then working together to solve it. Does that make sense? Because blaming others is looked on as bad, and usually it is, because it's blaming others for our own mistakes and something we can change. But sometimes the core issue has kind of been caused by an other, and we're going to acknowledge that we all think that and then work together to solve it. It's a unification thing, right? And if the other is, a nameless, faceless government, corporation, cultural, religious, whatever, that might be group unifying and not damage anything. I'm not real big on a negative, and that's really the truth. But sometimes, it's a negative bringing us together, so I'm not big on that. I don't do it deliberately. But sometimes, common enemy. Yeah. Sometimes you kind of do have a common enemy. I think of a common enemy, as perhaps like disease, right? Mm-hmm. Something bad that needs to be overcome. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So, anyway, it might, if it's not damaging to the group, it might be unifying. Hmm. Yeah. Yes, Ali and others are saying that oftentimes we blame others because of really our experiences with them, right, in the past, and maybe their experiences and our experiences with other groups were the same idea. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we are interpreting the facts differently. You know, I just read an interesting book. It was historical, about the United States and like that. And you know, in the United States, President Reagan, it's been a while already, President Reagan got shot. There was an assassination attempt. It was really done by a lunatic and like that. But the president got shot in publicly, and it looked like we might be in trouble with our head leader. The president is, of course, the main person, the named leader, so to speak. He's elected. He or she is elected. But anyway, President Reagan got shot. There was an information, a kind of hysteria gap, because it's a big deal when the president gets shot. And the government kind of closed down on information because they didn't want to have stuff kind of leak out half-baked, right? And, yeah, the answer is that he recovered. He was shot, but he had very good care and immediately, and he recovered fully. But there was a time period of scrambling, we'll call it, there, right? And this scrambling, the vice president couldn't be found. I've forgotten why. But a general, General Haig, took over and did kind of filled the power void to show that the United States government was still in working order and like that. And he made some speeches and kind of enjoyed it, let's face it, because you never hear from these guys in public. They just talk to the president. But anyway, he was kind of the spokesperson for a while, and he got on television, and he made a speech about the United States is just fine, and the president is getting the best care, that kind of a speech. And those are facts, right? Shot, can't find the vice president, his chief of staff, or say he was like a high general. I can't remember what he was, but he made some public pronouncements in the immediate time period, and the United States people understood this that was a terrible thing, and that the government was kind of scrambling, and that we'd know when the man got out of surgery, essentially speaking. Right, right. The Russians and other people in the world took those same exact, and they looked at it from a different perspective. They looked at it from their experience in the world and with politics, and their perspective, because experience is really your perspective on what's come before you. They looked at it from their perspective and their experience and thought that they were looking at a military coup. President shot, general took over, equals military coup. Now, if you look at it, that's reasonable, really, because that was their experience. So it really put Russia and all kinds of countries kind of in a state of what should we do, because there's been a military coup in the United States, because that was their experience with governments, and it looked like it. Because here was this general making kind of I'm in charge pronouncements. I don't even think he meant to. It's just that he kind of was reassuring the American people. But it looked like there might be a military coup. That was reasonable. And that was from experience of a different kind, because people have different experiences and interpret them differently. Right? Yeah. And you can't blame someone for thinking within the context of their experience. Right? And that happens a lot. Our experience is our interpretation. Someone else's experience is their interpretation. Let's find out what it is that we're doing, what it is that we are looking at. Yes, it's a good point that in that particular historical instance, we were kind of having disagreements with the Russian government at that time. And there was, and we've got different kinds of governmental security agencies. One of them is called the FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigation. There was a reaction as to whether or not the gunman that shot Reagan was sent by a different government, too. See, our reaction to our experience and our biases, right? And our culture, maybe, yeah, also had a different reaction. Took the same facts, had different reactions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's interesting that they really thought the experience had taught them that they were looking at was a military coup. And if you look at it completely, just straight on, you know, that wasn't an unreasonable thought. It looked like it might be, if that was your experience. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. Very, very an interesting perspective on people's experience. So what else do we blame? How else do we blame others? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I'm going to call this kind of a lack of empathy. What do you think? Sarah and others are saying that participants refuse to understand each other. Yeah. They're kind of refusing to understand each other. We're talking about it, but they're refusing to kind of have empathy of any sort. And remember, empathy is not agreement. It's just understanding. Mm-hmm. And that's something that needs to be worked through. And you can't just leave it on blaming someone else. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's really true. A lot of people are giving examples where people blame others for something that they hadn't actually personally done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pardon me. Something historic that happened. You know, isn't that the weirdest thing? Families get like that. And so do people. They remember some sort of a historical thing, and they just get all worked up about it. It's like, it happened 200 years ago. My people were not even here. Let's put that aside and work forward as individuals and not blame me for something that happened 200 years ago and didn't have anything to do with my personal family. Mm-hmm. And is not having, there's no real, you know, reason to. Yeah. Yeah, people are giving all kinds of examples. Yeah, and it's very strange. People hold a grudge that's not even their grudge, because they like holding a grudge. Yay, team! We can get past that. Let's wipe the slate clean. Not maybe forever, but at least for this group at this time, for this participation, right? That's the ticket. Going to do it for now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lack of empathy. Mm-hmm. You know, goes the other way, too. That's true. Jasmine and others are saying that sometimes it goes the other way, and they refuse to understand the leader. Mm-hmm. Time to ask why. Time to ask questions. Time to answer questions. Time to find out, you know, some groups need more leadership than others. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some groups are looking to blame lack of leadership so they can dissolve, because they don't want to be there. Does that make sense? Yeah. And they're kind of required to, but they'd like it to go away. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's your job to make it not do so. Mm-hmm. and some groups need a different leadership style. It's somewhat of a cultural thing. It's maybe not even an outside culture, maybe an organizational culture. Mm-hmm. And you have to be aware of it. We all have a leadership style. Excuse me. That we prefer, that we've gotten used to, that is, well, that's made us a good leader and made us desirable. We've all got a style, but sometimes you need to modify it so that the group can't blame you and so that you can effectively lead. Some groups want more... Okay, my personal leadership style is all-inclusive and kind of friendly, kind of enthusiastic, right? Now, some cultures, some groups want to be more sternly led than that. They want to really to have you tell them what to do and how to do it, and tell them if it's adequate or inadequate, right? They don't want such a ruling by consensus. They want the leader to lead and show them the way. That's something that you need to know about your group, about the dynamic, about the participant. Because really some people do want that. They want you to just show me how and not do this leading by consensus thing. Well, now we will get to the leading by consensus, but the consensus will be more controlled, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. People are saying if they truly need something that's not your style, to recuse yourself and to have them get somebody else to lead them. I think it is harder for people whose style is very strict and kind of strong leadership. I think it's harder for people who lead that way to go for consensus building because they just want to tell you what to do, we'll do it, and we will go home. It depends if you're really not clicking at all with the group and you don't understand them and they don't understand you. I usually reach understanding and consensus because I understand that's what's happening, and I ask lots of questions, and we talk about it, right? Yeah. I don't usually... never is a big word. But I think that's part of leadership skills is to understand the different leadership styles, too. Yeah. And if you really can't switch style, yeah, you might need to. You might need to say, I'm not the right person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting point that Monica and others are making, that sometimes people blame others and refuse to accept a new member, mm-hmm. because they blame the new people for disruption. We were doing okay before this person joined us. Yeah. Because they probably weren't, well, it made a disruption. And the new person has new ideas. And we've just gotten settled in with the ideas that we had. Yeah. People kind of react to change differently. They react to being able to do something differently, right? They do. They react to outsiders differently. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what about it when we blame the others for lack of progress, right? Lack of progress. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's there's a blame about aren't trying hard enough. Kiera and others are saying that that's a lot of times the new people or the others in the group or maybe some outsider like an expert, we want to say that they're not trying hard enough. If that is true, and you see that in groups, when people volunteer, for example, a project, sometimes they think they're going to, but when it comes down to it, they weren't serious about it or life intervened and they didn't quite make it, right? And they are still there, but they're not trying anymore. And that's a job for leadership. And to find out why, and maybe since lack of enthusiasm and lack of product, lack of doing something that you're assigned is contagious, maybe they need to back away from the group, to no longer be a member because they're not contributing anything. And if you're not contributing anything, it might be catchy. And other people will go, how come I am doing all the work? Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, passing blame, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Najin and others are talking about the blaming others when you didn't raise enough funds. Yeah, people do that because there was a quota and some people made it and some people didn't. You have to decide why and whether or not the people that didn't make the quota, didn't raise hardly any funds, why it was that that happened to them and whether they need group help. They just thought they could, and it just didn't work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jason and others are saying also people pass blame when a team falls apart because they had trouble working together as a team. And everybody points at someone else and said that they wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. You ever seen that? A lot of times I'm called in at about that point, which is exciting because I try to train people to call me in earlier, so that we can have the training first and the team doesn't fall apart. But you know how that is. Sometimes if you are the third party impartial, who's there because you've been hired, because you've been brought in as an expert, a lot of times that I'm brought in when the team isn't one anymore. And the question is why and what can we do about it? Yeah. Who, what, where, when, and why. Why and what, primary. And sometimes the team needs to be recalibrated, reassigned, shifted around, right? Because there's already been the blame game. Because if the team has fallen apart, then we're not getting very far. Right, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, within our context, we're going to run out of time and not do the recipes again. That okay? Yeah. Because we're having such an interesting conversation, and I'll try to leave enough time for one of them. I just looked up, and I went, oh, my goodness. Yeah, we've got like 10 minutes. Oh, well. So, what within our context, what actions do we need to accept responsibility for? What's on us? What's our responsibility? Yeah. What do we need to do? Mm-hmm. This is an interesting way of putting it. Carrie says we need to own our role as leader. Yeah, own it. Be proud of it. Be enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. Yes, and a lot of people, Kurt and others, are saying that the main thing we need to take responsibility for is to be a good example of the civility rules. We need to be a good example. Because if we are not, how are other people going to respect and follow us, right? We need to be a good example to the group, a good example of team building, a good example of civility, a good example of consensus making, right? Yeah. And not start the blame game unless, as we discussed it, we can all decide that it has, that the blame for the problem is squarely on the side of an anonymous third party that's not here and we're not going to really harm, but we just blame them for it, right? Right. We've all got some to agree upon, and now we're going to go forward towards the solution. See, sometimes blaming others is good for the team, right? Yeah, because we're fighting forward towards a solution. Mm-hmm. But we need a good example. Even in that, a good example of civility. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people are using the word, this is interesting. When we blame others and then we've come around, a lot of you Grace and others are talking about the need for an apology to kind of clear the air. Mm-hmm. That someone has usually said or acted in a way that was uncivil and blamed someone else, possibly in the room, right, in the group. Mm-hmm. And basically they usually did this before you were called in. That's why the team is in trouble. That's why they're not getting progress. Sometimes what is needed is an apology, right? Now, yeah, we're having a question about public in front of the whole group versus private. I'm going to say the two words that you guys say I say a lot. I'm going to say it depends. I am personally not real big on the kind of shaming apology where you apologize before the whole group, unless, especially a forced one. Now, a sincere apology is always a good thing because it clears the air. It has to be done with some care. I am... All right, one of your experiences do indeed color what you think. I like to be sure before such a thing occurs, before there's a public apology, I like to lay some groundwork privately. That's why we have the timeouts with the food so the leader can go and talk to people. I like to make sure what kind of an apology it is, and that it will be accepted graciously. Because there's nothing freaking worse than a public apology, and you put out your hand for shaking hands, and the other person walks away. That's like the ultimate incivility. And it will really harm the group dynamic. It'll polarize it. So I'm big on an apology. I think it's something that should be done privately and then announced to the group, maybe. And if you're going to go for the whole public scene, the whole thing, I like to be certain that both sides are sincere and they're both going to accept it. Yeah? Yeah. It's kind of a... In its way, people are saying that means that you kind of stage the apology. I suppose so. I don't see if there's anything wrong with that. To kind of make sure that it doesn't make things worse. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Alex and others are saying sometimes you need to bring in an outsider, an expert, to help decide the next step to success, because we've reached kind of an impasse, and we're blaming other people or each other or something for it. Sometimes even the leader is too close, gotten too close to the issues, and we need to step back for a second and we need to say, wait, you know what, let's get in an expert opinion. Let's bring in someone we can agree is an expert and have them look at what's happening and what we're doing and give us an opinion about it, mm-hmm. whether or not we're on the right track, whether what the next step should be. Interesting point that Carolyn and others are making, that a lot of times it is the leader who needs to use discretion to move on with the discussion and try to develop consensus for the next step. Yeah, we try to keep the flow, try to keep the process moving so that we can, well, so that we can get somewhere, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good point, that sometimes it's the leader that needs to accept responsibility for their mistakes. Sometimes we need to apologize to the group. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. If you've made a mistake or you have, well, something's happened that you were supposed to keep track of or do and you didn't quite do it, it came out wrong, or you kind of gave it to someone else and they didn't do it, that kind of a thing, right? Yeah, it happens. There's no sense. Have you ever seen anybody who's a leader? It's interesting to see other groups to join them. A lot of times I do that if I have time. And the leader has made a mistake. It's an obvious mistake. And it was a mistake. Whoops. People were people. But instead of apologizing and instead of admitting it, they kind of puff up and get surly and try to bullet through. Do not be this type of leader. First of all, it's no kind of leadership way. Second of all, the group will dissolve because you're no kind of a leader, and you've breached the civility rules. If you've made a mistake, admit it, accept responsibility, apologize, and move on. Let's see how we can rectify it. Right? Yeah. Sometimes things get kind of, even like a, I would call it a clerical mistake. Something that you've missed some sort of a deadline, which I hope it's not a big one. But you need to move on and go towards the next deadline. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point, that the leader should accept, Alonzo and others are saying that the leader should accept responsibility for wins as well as mistakes. Yeah. Accept praise graciously, too. Isn't that funny? I have kind of trouble for a long time. I had trouble accepting praise. I don't know why, and I didn't realize it until it was pointed out to me. Somebody would say, what a fabulous, wonderful, good job I'd done. I'd say, well, I just lucked out. You know, I had trouble accepting praise. Isn't that the strangest thing? So you need to remember to accept praise when you win, in addition to apologizing for mistakes. And I didn't realize that I had done that until it was actually pointed out to me, and I went, yeah. That's really stupid. Yeah, self-praise. So how can we... Oops, we are running out of time. So let's talk about preventing blaming others. Let's talk about empathy and listening. And really paying attention is the key to it. Yeah, pay attention so that if we're starting to do that, if we're veering off track... To get us back to the process, to kind of, the participants need oftentimes to be encouraged, right? Yeah. So, thank you. Look, we are out of time. It was such a wonderful discussion. I know we didn't make it to the recipes, but we will next time, hopefully. I know sometimes they'll last for weeks. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.